Watch on Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Here we go, Mayor Michael Bloomberg and John Gambling. Good morning, everybody. 9 minutes after 8 o'clock on this Friday in July. Mr. Mayor, hello and good morning.
Good morning. A piece of muffin. This is it's pretty good, actually. Not good for my waistline.
Well, we try and get maybe that one stale.
No, it has a little bit of coconut taste. Thank you very much. It's nice of you to provide this stuff.
Nice to have you here. Another hot weekend. Looks like a heat wave in New York City.
Yeah, but heat waves on weekends, from Con Ed's point of view, are a lot
good
easier
idea.
Because... you know, a lot of the buildings don't use electricity. Con Ed actually got through the last one. You know, we didn't talk about it last week. We were away, but they've been investing an awful lot of money each year. They say they're doing it, and you saw the results. Also, all the city agencies got in. We turned out the lights in our buildings and the air conditioners up to a higher temperature. We took a couple of waste management plants that we didn't need offline. They used electricity. We put them on generators so they could offload some demand from Con Ed. And the public listened. And, you know, the bottom line is if you do your laundry late at night, it's a lot better than if you do it during the day when the air conditioners are running in big buildings and that sort of thing.
When I was making my list of things to talk about today, I have the cooling centers will be available, obviously.
Yeah, when it's hot for 2 days in a row, we open them, and, you know, they get
are
some
they used?
Demand. Yeah. Yeah, they get some use. It depends on the day and how long, but yes.
Okay.
John, we cannot afford things that we run that aren't used.
Well,
we're going through, you know, the bottom line is if you want to have monies for the things you really care about, you can't do those things that you that people don't need. That's why some of these senior centers we're trying to consolidate. You know, we had senior centers where they had whole staff to cook lunch and three people ate. I'm sorry if, you know, we're not going to take away people's ability to get a meal, but if they've got to go a little further, just the reality is you can't do everything. It's the public's money.
Well, before I switch subject matters, I was just curious. You touched on the electric situation with the heat wave. And the water supply, any issues there when
no,
you've got
water,
a heat demand?
Water's fine. You know, we use 1 billion gallons a day or something like that. Our third water tunnel, I talked about it yesterday because I was at the breakthrough for the extension of seven lines. We can talk about that later. But, you know, our third water tunnel has been fully drilled out, and they're lining it, and it'll be open another year or so. And then you can breathe easier because right now, if one of the two water tunnels we have were to collapse, minor earthquake or something, you'd have to evacuate the part of the city that it serves. You cannot have people living in a building where there's no water for the fire department to put out a fire, or no sanitation, or, you know, ability to cook.
Where would
anything.
You move people?
There is no, I mean, you're talking about millions of people. There is no easy answer, which is why when I first came into office, we sat down and I said, what could literally close the city? And this was the thing that most stood up. Some things you just can't, you know, an act of God, there's not a lot you can do about it. You can prepare, but if it happens, it happens. This is something we could do something about, and so we put more money into this than the previous five administrations. It's been going on for 40 years or something, 50 years. And so the Sandhogs have finished digging the whole thing.
I can't believe it's finally going to be finished.
At this point,
it's been going forever.
The end is, it's not only that you can see that that is a light at the end of the tunnel and not a train, you're almost at the end. It is very close. And the design is a lot better than the old design. The old designs, the valves were down 500 feet below into bedrock the way the tunnel is. The new design, you bring the tunnel up to the surface, put the valve there, and then go back down to 500 feet below. So you could fix it if
so
it breaks.
Exactly. So you have access
That's
to
That's one of the problems we're worried about, apparently. They don't want to close, close one of a section, which you could bypass, to go in and reline it or to clean it or just look at it. Because you're not sure you can, the valve would reopen, and the valves are so far down it could take months to dig down to fix the thing. And so we've not been able to do the maintenance. There's one leak in one of the, that's not a city water tunnel, but the one that comes down from one of the big reservoirs that leaks, you know, tens of millions of gallons a day. Now, that sounds like an enormous amount of water. But in the context of using a billion gallons a day, it is a small amount.
And there's just no way to fix it because there's no alternative.
Well, I've always thought, you know, the water that comes out of there has created a big wetlands. Federal law says you can't turn off water to a wetlands. So what do you do?
let it leak? Or
I don't know. Someday there'll be lots of lawsuits, but it will be long after you and I are gone.
All right. You've become a tunnel expert. You were down underground yesterday.
There I was with Jay Walder, who runs the MTA, who you had on your show. A really great guy, and he really is doing the right thing. And, you know, the Albany legislature has starved the MTA. And he's got to deal with that, and there's some cutbacks and economies. But the bottom line is, he needs, unless he's going to get more money, this will never be as a service that serves all parts of the city or does it as well as you'd like it to, so that it's a better alternative to the people driving. And he's going to have to cut some services and lay off some people. And, you know, the union scream bloody murder. They should be screaming at Albany, not at the MTA, because he has to, in the end, you know, you say balance the budget. The state can borrow. MTA has to balance the budget. If he wants to pay the workers on the next pay period, it's got to have cash in the bank. The bank won't honor the checks otherwise. So we had an idea on how to do it. Albany said, no, we got a better idea. We're still waiting.
All right, that tunnel that they broke through with their big boring machines yesterday, right underneath the bus station, the Port Authority bus station, I didn't realize that that's where an existing tunnel exists.
The number 7 line, which is the line you'd take if you're going out to Shea Stadium or Citi Field, you take that in, it goes across town, and then it ends at about 10th Avenue and 42nd Street, thereabouts. It then turns south a little bit, and there is an extra spur of a few blocks that was used to store trains if they had too many trains at that end and they wanted to push one out of the way, it was broken or something. So we're connecting to that. That's why the connection happens to be under the Port Authority bus terminal. And so the drilling was all the way up to that, and then now they'll connect, and it'll still take 2 or 3 years now because you got to put in tracks and electricity and security and all that
stuff. They started over on 11th Avenue and what, down in the
The last southern stop will be about 34th Street by Javits, but it does go, once again, you have an extension down to store trains at that end. So, yeah, the first place they started digging in, or the southernmost digging shaft down, is down in the 20s.
I think they started, doing that sometime in 2009, last year?
I was there.
It didn't take very long.
Because it's all through. It's funny. If it's rock, hard rock, it is very easy. There's drilling machines. There's two of them named Emma and Georgina, because I got the privilege of naming them. You have to name them after girls, I was told, and they said, "May you pick the name?" So I picked my two daughters' names. One cared, the other one said,
now,
"That's nice."
Ladies and gentlemen, there's a piece of trivia to throw out at a cocktail.
Absolutely. These two boring machines now will get disassembled. They got them in Germany. They'll send them back. Whether they can be used again, I don't know. Everyone has a different size, and these things get so beat up over the years. When they dug the tunnel from England to France, at the end, when they completed the digging, they backed the machines up, turned them off at an angle, and just drilled into the rock on the side.
And
sealed them up and left them there. It cost a fortune to take them apart, and they're probably not usable. You can't just slap a coat of paint on them and have somebody buy them. But this is going to open up the whole west side. And the example I gave was London. The Reichmans, a Canadian family, built this enormous complex. Nobody rented any space because the government had promised a subway line to there. Without that, you couldn't get there. And then reneged. And the Reichmans went bankrupt. And somebody bought it. And then the government built the line. And it's phenomenally successful. you have to build the infrastructure first before anybody will build. And I think it's related companies that have the contract at the rail yards over on the west side to start building. And I think we're very close to that. The banks are starting to getting closer to making big loans for big buildings. Construction is starting to do better. You know, things have gone better in the city. I saw yesterday statistics out. The number of people working in New York last month set a record. We set another record. Two in a row.
The actual number of people employed.
That's a number that is a hard number, because when you're on the payroll, the company has to report for Social Security and the tax people. The unemployment rate is sort of, the economists would tell you, it's not really all that useful. It gets a lot of press. People either, it's a telephone survey, and they only survey a small percentage, so there's a margin of error. But also, if you, when the economy starts doing better, the unemployment rate always goes up, because people start looking for jobs. So when you survey and say, are you looking for a job, which is what the unemployment rate tries to measure, the answer is more likely yes when things are getting better. When things are getting worse, people drop out and say, no, I can't get a job. The heck with it. I'm not going to bother. I'll stay home and whatever. And the unemployment rate goes down. But the news for New York City is actually good. The news for the rest of the country is much more worrisome.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let me tell you, speaking of revenues and being employed, let me keep my job here. Let me take care of some business. We will be right back. And don't forget, of course, before we finish up, your opportunity to talk to Mayor Bloomberg, 800-321-0710, if you've got a question. 800-321-0710. Get in line now. Coming right back. Here we go. Don't forget, if you've got the question for the mayor, the telephone number, 800-321-0710. We were talking about the water tunnels, but I understand that you've got new meters. The city's invested pretty heavily.
The question is, how much does water cost, you know?
I don't have a clue.
About a penny a gallon, which is 1,000 times cheaper than some bottled water. A gallon of bottled water costs you 1,000 times
more.
And
it always gets touted as the best water in the world.
One of the big problems we've had is people on average pay something like $800 a year for water on a family. And
at a penny a gallon, that's a lot of water.
Yeah, people use a lot, and they complain about it, but they don't cut down their consumption. And reading the meters is time-consuming, cost us a lot of money. And then some people's meters we can't read because they're not home. And so we send them an estimated bill, and then eventually we read the meter and find out that the estimate was too low, and then they get a bigger bill, and they yell and scream, or they say they didn't use the water, and they go to this little court we have. We have 30 people that just work on this full time. So somebody had a brilliant idea, we've put in 400,000 meters so far that four times a day measure your water consumption for a big building every hour, and it sends it out to this new network that we put around the city that automatically it listens, and it sends it back. So the bills we send to these 400,000 people, and soon we'll have all 800,000 homes in the city, it sends you a real bill. And that's going to save all of those people where you argue. There's no argument anymore. It's going to save the cost. We pay Con Ed actually to do the water meter reading. Won't have to do that anymore. You'll know how much you can go. You'll be able to go online. You can already do that in the Bronx, and you'll be able to go pretty soon throughout the city in the next few weeks. See how much water you're using compared to last year, this year, what time of the day you used it. So it really does make a very big difference. And then hopefully down the road, we can get Con Ed, and they've got a legal thing they've got to fix. So the same thing with your electricity, so you can see. And then they can charge a different rate. We always say, well, do your laundry late at night because in the summer it spreads the demand out for electricity. And Con Ed could charge less at that time of the day, so it'll give you an economic incentive to do it. But this is a win-win-win for everybody, and just the beginning of the kind of thing you're going to be able to do down the road. Technology is letting you do all this. We have to have the infrastructure, and that's why we put in this network, this wireless network throughout the city. Police and fire will use it, but so will you. So will everybody.
All right, that's interesting. And the computer does most of the work.
That's the whole idea. Once you get it in, it is relatively zero cost to maintain. Not zero, but relatively zero. And some of these things take forever to put in, but when you get them in, they are enormous savings.
All right, I want to get into some things here about the stop and frisk list and some of the other things, but I don't want to push the time on the half hour here. Governor's Island. I understand they've got more fun and games going on.
The Big
Island.
Apple Circus is going to have its Family Fest Circus workshops to the island, and you can learn how to clown around and juggle and participate in other circus games. Free to the public between noon and 3 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays, right on the parade grounds next to the Trapeze School, which will give you trapeze lessons on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays.
You'll be there for the first one?
I've always wanted to try the trapeze, but I don't know.
I tried it a long time
really?
Ago. It's very hard. You'd have better luck at it than I would because you're smaller than I am. I think that's why trapeze artists are always small and skinny.
That could be. Governor's Island actually is just setting records every time. And we took this Governor's Island over from the state, and we're committed to building a world-class park. And if you take a look, cities around the country are starting to copy this and copy the High Line. Absolutely. High Line is one of the great hits. The second section of it is opening next summer, I think. That will take it. Property values along the High Line are skyrocketing. People want to live in that neighborhood all of a sudden. Whitney is going to build a new museum downtown by the original section. And then the third section, we're negotiating with the owner to try to get the rail line that would takes it all the way up to the rail yards where all of this development's going to be. And you know, the longer you make it, the more people come, and it's
Joe
great.
Bartlett had a story, I think, at the 7:30 news about an idea that has come out of one of your commissioner's offices about taking dumpsters and turning them into swimming pools.
You know,
on Park
I read
Avenue.
About that in the paper. It's why not? You know, all kidding aside, it's these kinds of things. People laugh at it, but around the world, we've become the city to go to. Tourism is one of our major industries. It's the revenue from tourists who come here from around the world and around the country that pay our cops and firefighters and teachers.
Has the recession cut into tourism?
We are virtually at the same level as last year. It was down 1 or 2%. I think we've done better than that. We, this year, to show you what's happening in the city, this year we're adding 7,500 hotel rooms to New York City.
Right down here in this neighborhood. That's huge.
But all over, all five boroughs. I mean, in places you'd never in a million years. There was an article in Marriott in Brooklyn, which is a very successful hotel just over the Brooklyn Bridge. It used to be one of the few hotels. Now there's hotels sprouting up all over Brooklyn. The Bowery, 12 years ago, derelicts in the streets, and every store was selling secondhand
kitchen appliances.
Yeah. Today, one of the hottest hotels, hot restaurants. This is where the young people want to live. And all of this, not the only thing, but it's the art things that people joke about. Remember with those statues? Anthony Gormley, I think is the artist's name, a Brit. Nice guy. That was a one-day story of everybody jumping. You know, you wonder what goes through. I mean, the press just wants to have a story. So
you need pictures. You need a headline.
Yeah, I understand that. But on the other hand, you don't want to scare away. This is what makes our city what it is. This is people. We have become what London was. We've taken away the mantle. People think of us as low crime and a happening city. And you can say, I don't care if it happens. Yes, you do, because that's our tax base.
Absolutely. The more people that spend money here, the more money that we have to deal with, or you have to deal with, and we benefit from. Mr. Mayor, it's 8:31. Let's take our half-hour break. More news from Joe Bartlett. Joe. Okay, here we go. Back with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, 23 before 9 o'clock. Again, let me see here. Mike has two lines open. He's tough to get through, Mike Figliola. So give him a call if you've got a question, 800-321-0710. All right, Mr. Mayor, the governor is set to veto, we understand, sign the bill that would take away.
Called me last night to tell me.
I know that you've advocated, you and Kelly have advocated.
Well, somebody wrote a story in the paper that Kelly and Bloomberg lose. We didn't lose. The people that are going to lose are the victims. You know, and when we're worried about crime coming back, to take away an effective tool. I mean, Kelly has a list of 200 crimes where we solved the crime and kept those people from committing more crimes because of the data. You know, it's hard to argue there's any damage done if we have the data, but even if it only helps you solve one crime and it helps you solve a lot more, to not have it just doesn't make any sense. And, you know, it's... in the proponents of the bill are in neighborhoods where crime is high, and we're trying desperately to protect the people who live in those communities, and they've just taken away one of the tools. Is it the be-all and end-all? No. Will it stop us from working hard and keeping most crime away? No. It's not going to stop us. But these arguments that, well, it's, you know, could be used wrong, I can tell you that we do use it the right way, and without it, we can't use it.
There's lots of things that can be used the wrong way, and you just hope that you protect yourself from somebody who might do that.
The danger here is that once you start going down the slope, every single thing is going to be, well, it probably won't hurt, so let's take it away. And pretty soon, if you don't, we used to, for example, enormous percentage of the, I don't know if it's half, but a lot of people double-dipped and triple-dipped on getting government aid, food stamps, welfare payments, that sort of thing. We put fingerprints in. Actually, Giuliani was the first one to do it, and we've continued it. And all of a sudden, dramatic drop, and because the money went to those who deserve it, and you get one, you only have a right to one. Somebody says, well, if there's no corruption anymore, why do you have a fingerprinting? Well, that's what keeps it. I mean, it's that kind of logic that's playing pandering to a handful of people that think that it's good politics, but it doesn't keep us safe. And the basis for all of our community is safe streets. You have to be able to walk the streets, and if not, you're not going to live here, you're not going to come
here. We've seen it in our lifetime.
And they say, oh, well, this is not going to take you back. I don't know which one of these things is going to take you back, but in the aggregate, they certainly send you in that direction. And this just makes no sense. Ray says, look, it's a real tool. And we do solve some crimes because of it. And this has nothing to do with the number of people you stop and frisk. This is simply keeping the data. Well, what's wrong with keeping the data? We have data on everything. You wait until we have facial recognition software, and somebody's going to have a record of every person that walks down by your house. You just point a camera at them, the software will do it. That's coming. I mean, this days of we put license plates on your car. You can read those by computer now, and we know where you're driving.
Nobody knows better than
cell phones. Everybody knows where you are.
Knows where you are. How about the stuff that every stroke you make, Google or some server someplace knows exactly what you're doing all the time.
Absolutely. So to take away a crime-fighting one doesn't make a lot of sense.
All right. Schools, the 18 schools that Joel Klein wanted to close
19.
Down, I gather are going to remain open. A deal was cut this week.
They're going to remain open. We're going to redo the process. The judge said we didn't put out the right information. It was fundamentally we didn't dot the I's and cross the T's. We're going to go through the process. It'll take 6 months. We'll do that exactly according to what the law says, and then we'll close the schools. In the meantime, some of these schools are going to have 20 people. And if they have only 20 students, most of the teachers and the staff is not going to be there because the schools get funded based on the number of kids. We have been working very well with the United Federation of Teachers, Michael Mulgrew, the president, to use some of that space to open some new schools. So, all's not lost, and it'll get done anyways. Once again, some columnist wrote today, oh, the parents win. The parents are sending their kids to schools that don't teach the kids to read or write. This is craziness. These kids are never going to be able to share in the great American dream unless they get a good education. And to say, well, I don't think they should close these schools. We're not closing them. We're just changing the management and changing the teachers. If they don't educate the kids, change it.
I saw that story and I said to myself, how could a parent want a school to remain in its present form that has failed year after year after year after year teaching their children? It just made no sense.
Well, the obvious answer is, what kind of schools did they go to? We've got to, if your logic is such that you want your kids to go to a bad school, You need an education,
I
too.
I think you're probably right. There was another story. I think it was the New York Post ran a rather extensive story starting last Sunday on the pension issue, and they did a very good job of illustrating the pension problem in the city, where basically with a contribution by an employee, city employee, of a dollar, the people of the city of New York pay $8 and something else, which just shows the immensity of the amount of money.
Well, when we talk about this all the time, the pension system fundamentally is broken. We can't afford it. Albany this year, with all of us talking about the big problems, there were a whole bunch of bills in Albany, only some of which got passed, and some of those, in all fairness, the governor vetoed, thank goodness. Good for him. But they keep trying to give more pension benefits. I know why the workers want it. I would want it, too. I know why the union fights for it. But Albany, that's got to balance the budget, and you saw Tom DiNapoli's story in the paper today about half of the budget balancing is fiction and it's not going to happen. We are starting to get used to the fact in our budget we're counting on this extra 6 months of Medicaid help called FMAP. It's, I said, was in the budget because it had been in the Republican and the Senate budget, been in the House budget, and nobody ever thought it would get thrown out. The House then redid a bill because for political reasons that threw it out. We're starting to get, I've said by October, if we don't have it, we're going to have to lay off a lot of people. I pulled together a bunch of our commissioners yesterday and said, come on, we got to come up with some ideas to save more money because it doesn't look like that's going to come through. And our state, they have $1 billion in this next year and $1 billion a year afterwards. They're not going to get that money either, and that would really bust their budget. They haven't even started to think about that.
So where does everybody go to solve this problem? Is it in borrowing, as Dick Ravitch had suggested, on short-term borrowing?
I never thought that made any sense. That just avoids everything. That's probably the worst of all possible things. Dick had an idea that in return for borrowing and letting the legislature off the hook, they would fix a lot of the abuses of power and inefficiencies and that sort of thing. And I said then to him, I thought they glommed on to the borrowing awful quick, and not one of those reforms, not one, would ever get through. They're just not going to take away their own power.
So the only other option are higher taxes.
Well, you either raise taxes, cut expenses, or you borrow. Take your poison. People always say, let's cut expenses. And then, but not my expense, because what I get from the government is not waste. That's deserved. What you get is waste. Let's cut yours. And when it comes to taxes, not for me, but you should pay more taxes. In New York City, one half of 1% of the people pay 50% of our personal income tax. And some people say, nobody's going to leave the city. Take a look at Maryland. They put in a higher tax on the higher people. People that had more money were paying more taxes. And they said, look, only 2% left. Yeah, but if only a quarter of those leave here, that's half of our tax base. You can't do it. Will they do it? I have friends who keep telling me that they're moving, and all they have to do is change where they live by law, because they have a house in Connecticut, let's say, in a house here. And I had a couple friends last week call me and say they got calls from both the state of Connecticut and the state of New Jersey coming in to see them, making a pitch, move your business to Connecticut or New Jersey. We won't tax you the same way.
You can't compete with that. I mean, the state
of New
York.
Yeah, you can. You can. Just don't raise taxes. And make, what we're trying to do for the city is to make it easier to do business. But most of these taxes we don't have any control over. That's done at the state level. The only tax the city has control over is its property tax. And that is what we estimate the revenue, we estimate our expenses, and the difference is the property tax. It's just set basically automatically. Everything else, we can ask Albany to do something. And sometimes, because they want to shift the blame to us, they'll say, well, we won't raise that tax unless you pass a bill that just says, please, please, please do this for us in the city council, and then they can blame us. That was with congestion pricing. They said, we'll pass it if you do that. We passed ours, and then they didn't do it.
The financial reform bill is going to get signed early next week. Yeah. Is that something that will hurt, be negative?
All depends on, it isn't going to help. It's going to make, actually, it's funny. I think it will make For most businesses in the country, it'll hurt. For the financial services, it probably won't, but they'll just pass on the costs. And so borrowing costs and servicing costs for your bank account and everything invariably will be higher. Now, it may be good to do that, not good to have to pay more, but what you pay more for may be desirable. That's a social policy issue, but not good for most businesses, not that bad for the financial business, banks and insurance companies.
From what you know of it, do you think
nobody
that
knows
solves the problem of regulation?
It's all in regulation. It's all in the regs that they write now.
Which they haven't done.
They haven't done. I mean, the SEC is going to spend an enormous amount of time writing regs. I listened to Arthur Levitt this morning, and he didn't exactly jump up and down and say this was great. I think it's going to be a long slug. This is great for the lobbyists, and this is great for the lawyers. Those are the two groups that will just make out. Anytime you have a 2,000-page bill that nobody's ever read, it's just a field day for them. That's what they thrive on.
Seems to be the theme lately, but we'll leave that for discussion for another time. Let me take a break, then we'll have a discussion with you on the telephone, 800-321-0710. Back with Mayor Bloomberg in a moment. 9 minutes before 9 o'clock, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and let me move my microphone over here. You on the telephone, where are we going to go? We're going to go to line one first, and that's Fran. Hello, Fran.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mayor Bloomberg.
Good morning, Fran.
I'm calling to thank you very much because the Mr. Softee issue here in my immediate area was resolved. I received a call within approximately 4 hours on the day that I had spoken to you, right after I had spoken to you, from Ray Carrero. He's with your community affairs office.
Exactly. Works for Nasli Parvasi.
And he was great. He was very receptive, and he was a great listener. And I'd say within a week, the issue was solved. And all of the neighbors keep remarking how they can all now retire and go to sleep.
Good. Well, when the Mr. Stuffy guy shows up again, give us another call. come on, John.
So obviously,
we actually went looking,
there.
Fran. Okay. We went looking for him, and he didn't show up for a while. We couldn't find him, and then eventually he showed up. And we gave him a ticket, and he stopped. And hopefully, he doesn't come back because we solved this problem on this show a few years ago.
Absolutely.
So,
well, sometimes like a bad
thing. Fran, you call us, and I'm glad we could help. Have a nice weekend.
All right, Fran. There you go. Let's see here. Chip is next. Chip, you've got the mayor's ear. Go.
Hi, Chip.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mayor. My question for you, Mayor, is. How do you consider it un-American to question the appropriateness of a mosque at Ground Zero? My understanding is there's issues surrounding the financial disclosures on the part of the owner and their ties to terror groups.
Well,
and just finally, how do you square your position with the families of the victims and the first responders?
Well, Chip, I don't think it's un-American to question. You have a right to say what you want. And in terms of the first responders, they went in to save people's lives, but people that gave their lives gave it so that we could have religious freedom. I mean, if you think about it, I don't think we want to go in this city or in this country and start looking at the funding for anybody who's of any other religion. You really want to go and every church and every temple and every synagogue? No, you can't go and look at that. People have a right to pray, and I think, you know, that we have 250,000 Muslims that live in this city. I can't tell you there isn't a bad apple in there. There's a bad apple in 250,000 of anything. But these are our citizens, and they have a right to have their own place of worship. And, if somebody does something wrong, then you go after them. But there's no reason why this, if people want to build a religious place of worship, America was founded. The pilgrims came here because they couldn't practice their religion back 3,000 miles to the east. And for us to walk away from that, particularly after 9/11 certainly is something that says, hey, it's exactly those freedoms that people tried to take away from us, and we're not going to let that happen. So I don't think it's un-American. I just don't think that the government should keep some people from praying the way they want to and let others pray. And, you know, the more religious you are, the more you want to keep government out of religion. And there's just no reason why they shouldn't. People who happen to be Muslim or have a right, the same rights that people who happen to be Christian or Jewish or Hindu or any other religion. And God knows how many religions there are. Oh, God does know probably how many religions.
Yeah, he keeps count.
I assume.
Okay.
Anyways, thank you, Chris.
All right, Chip, thanks a lot. Let's see here. Number three, Mitchell, you're up next. Hello, Mitchell.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Mayor Bloomberg.
Good morning.
Question on the there's a lot of controversy right now about the effect of the stimulus money, and I was wondering, what is your assessment of the effect in New York in terms of job creation and project creation? And also, does that money filter down from Albany, or does it come directly?
You've got a sore point, a particular point. I have tried to convince the federal government you give it directly to the cities where the people are. In fact, it does go to the state generally. There's one or two parts that don't. I think education money might come directly to us, but the other goes through the state, and they spread it around, and not necessarily equitably based on population. So that's a particular thorn on the side of every mayor throughout this country. They all scream. But, you know, most of the people in Washington, on both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue and both sides of the aisle, their background is state government. And none of them, virtually none of them, ever been a mayor, so they don't ever understand the issue, really. Or maybe they do, and they just don't like the idea that the mayors want the money because the mayors have to deliver the services. These jobs, New York City government got about $3 billion in stimulus money. $800 million of that is for education. I think it's fair to say it is very, very unlikely that Congress is going to pass another stimulus bill. And so one of the great worries we have for next year is we're not going to have that. Now, that translates into maybe this $2 billion that we've expected next year, or we would, if they continued everything, the other billions, because it was a one-time thing. And so, you know, I've been working with Joel Klein and all the agencies, had another meeting yesterday and another meeting the day before. What are we going to do? Because you're not going to get that money again. State has even more money, and I have absolutely no idea whether they understand that or what they're going to do about it. But we're not going to. You're not going to get another stimulus bill given the politics in Washington now. All of a sudden, the Democrats have become very leery of spending more money. There are some who want to just print money. Awful lot of Democrats that say no, and a lot of the Republicans who say no. Deficits do matter. And so we're not going to get those kinds of monies. Now, they also, there's stimulus money that goes and creates jobs in the private sector and that sort of thing. The real problem with the stimulus bill is it pumps a lot of money in, but it just became everybody had to get some. And a lot of the projects, the argument, oh, I'm going to save the jobs by helping the industry. If you had time and you really tried to do things that created new jobs, I think it's fair to say that an awful lot of the stimulus monies that were given out would not have been given out that way. The problem is once you start down this road, every lobbyist
is
there.
How do you turn around?
Every congressman and every senator has got to bring something home for their constituents. Don't blame them. Blame the constituents. We said, well, we're shovel-ready projects. Well, we gave them a list of shovel-ready projects, and oh, no, that's not those kinds of shovel-ready projects. And most of the things that they – I think a big chunk of the stimulus money has actually not been spent yet. It's been given out, but it hasn't created jobs. So there'll be an effect long-term. But in the end, even the government can't prime the pump that much. What you have to do is you have to get banks willing to lend, which is sort of going in the opposite direction of this finance bill that they just passed. And you've got to have confidence that we are addressing our major problems like immigration and tort reform and who's going to pay for Social Security and all that sort of stuff. And the public is saying, hey, I'm worried about it. You see the same thing in Europe. If we don't do something about it, the public's not going to spend. And in fact, when I talk to my friends who have stores across the country, they say New York actually is doing okay. Rest of the country is very worrisome. There's, I don't know if it's double dipping because I don't know if we ever came out of the first dip. But the public is, all the polls show, very worried. They're not, they don't think the country is going in the right direction. They don't think we're addressing the major issues. Now, in all fairness, the elected officials, when you do address them, they don't like it. The public says, oh, yeah, well, I didn't realize that.
I think that there's an atmosphere, though, of understanding that the pain will indeed have to come. And we look at New Jersey.
As long as it's your pain.
Chris, he's making a...
He is, in all fairness, that is correct. He walked in and he said, I'm going to do it. didn't get everything he wanted, but he got an awful lot of it. He's going to have a tougher time next year and the year after. This is not a one-time thing. You don't solve many years of spending more than you have overnight, but it's a start. And a lot of editorial boards have said, take a look at New Jersey. New York should do the same thing.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thank you very much. Have yourself a good weekend, and we'll catch up with you next time. Next Friday, we will be off again, but we'll see you in a couple of weeks. That's it for the crew here on the John Gambling Show, 9 o'clock of the weekend.